I'm Dan Runcie, the founder and host of Trapital, and this week we got some big news from the Recording Academy. After 54 years, CBS and the Grammys will be parting ways. 2026 will be the final year that the Grammys will be on CBS, because the following year in 2027 will be the first year of a new 10-year pact between the Recording Academy and Disney. The annual Grammys broadcast will be aired on ABC, Disney Plus, and Hulu, and this is part of a $500 million deal. First, it's a huge blow to CBS. In many ways, CBS's brand has been that it is the home to the Grammys, and the Masters, and March Madness, and a few other things, but the Grammys was always something that was core to that brand. But we're in a changing world where streaming has evolved quite a bit, and Disney offers a lot more that CBS likely didn't have, whether it was money, stability from the actual parent company itself, or all of the assets that Disney has to maximize the global reach of this show and the future of the show moving forward. In this conversation, I'm joined by Michael Wood, pop music critic from the LA Times. He's written and covered a bunch on the Grammys over the years, so he's a perfect person to chat about this with. And we talked about other things that we should be expecting with this year's show too, such as some of the big storylines of Taylor Swift, Beyonce, and other major artists competing for awards, but newer artists too, like Chappell Roan, Sabrina Carpenter, Shaboozey, and a whole lot more. Really fun conversation. Hope you enjoy it. Let's dive in. This episode of Trapital is brought to you by Fuga, a downtown-owned company that is empowering independent music. In the world of music distribution, Fuga is the straw that stirs the drink. It provides clients like Netflix, Riot Games, and BandLab with a content management system that streamlines the process. The platform is the largest full-service B2B distributor. You'll get your music to all the major DSPs like Spotify and Apple Music. But Fuga is not just for the major companies. It's the most powerful UGC and rights management service and platform in the industry. Fuga's in-house tools help you better monetize your content and ensure faster, accurate reporting for both streaming and physical releases. Their hands-on team will guide you through the process. You can learn more about Fuga by clicking the link in our show notes or visiting their website at www.fuga.com. That's F-U-G-A.com. And if you chat with their team, tell them I sent you. This episode of Trapital is brought to you by Elgato, my go-to for podcasting. One of my favorite parts of running Trapital is this show, and I often get asked, what's your setup? What do you use for this? What do you use for that? Well, most of my go-to tools are from Elgato. Their cam link helps me get that high-quality camera setup for the shots, their key lights keep the space bright, their mic arms are easy to use and save me a ton of desk space, and I just received their new mic arms, which are somehow even better than the first ones. A professional virtual setup is a game changer, even if you don't have your own podcast or YouTube show or any type of on-screen format. Check out Elgato Mic Arms with the link in our show notes and tell them that I sent you. And if you want to learn more, you can also check out the link to see all of the products that they have available on their page. All right, we're here with Michael Wood, pop music critic from the LA Times. We got this October surprise that the Grammys will be leaving CBS and moving over to Disney after 54 years. Michael, what were your thoughts when you saw the news?
You got to figure two things. One, Disney either just backed up the Brinks truck and said, we'd like to give you all this money to take the Grammys, more than CBS is going to give you. But I think also, clearly this seems to me that the Recording Academy looks at Disney as a bigger player in the streaming space than it does CBS. Disney, obviously, Plus has had a lot of music content over the past few years and some really high profile stuff. Obviously, the Beatles, Peter Jackson thing, the Beach Boys doc they had last year or this year. So you figure with Disney Plus and with Hulu, this is the Recording Academy just saying, all right, to the extent that we want the Grammys to live in more of a streaming space beyond just broadcast TV, Disney are the people to deliver that versus CBS, which it's hard to see the flaw in that logic. That seems pretty apparent to me.
I would agree. No disrespect to Paramount Plus, but it's just not a service that captures the zeitgeist in that type of way. It's not a service that has the subscriber numbers either. 71 million subscribers. and a large number of those being based in the US. So if you look at the Recording Academy wanting to continue to grow the show, how do you do that? You're able to do that with the larger global reach of Disney Plus as a platform. You're able to do it with Hulu. Disney's also likely willing to spend more. They already have the Oscars. They already are in the mix for other things. That allows them to be much more attractive to different advertising partners. It's tough for CBS, but it's also hard to say that I'm too surprised when I take a step back and think about it all.
Totally. Being in the same place as the Oscars, although to the average viewer, they don't care, they don't notice. But I think the Grammys have always been second banana to the Oscars and always will be. It's just a smaller thing. But I think that being in the stable with the Oscars now, I feel like the Grammys are probably feel good about that. I was also struck in the press release that the Recording Academy sent out, Harvey Mason had some kind of line where he talked about Disney as like a home for creators, or where creators are always first in line, whatever it was. And yeah, of course, that's just like Disney branding, but that tells you something about the way they think about Disney and the fact that they feel like they'll be in a better creative home. Props to CBS. I think that they've overseen the evolution of the show in the past few years, and I think they've made it much more current, much livelier, much more attuned to the way people watch stuff these days. But that line in the press release just made me think, okay, they're trying to find a home that is perhaps more embracing of these sort of ways to update the show and to keep it creative and fresh. And
it's a huge bet on the mouse, too, overall. We've obviously seen Disney has had its high moments, its low moments. You could even say that now that things are in a bit of a question mark. What does a succession plan look like post-Iger? How do they work out some of the challenges with parks or even with Disney Plus? But still, that's a fraction of the challenges and disarray compared to everything that's been happening at Paramount Global over the past year. Talking about 50% layoffs recently, as of a couple of months ago, that were announced, a $6 billion write-off on its cable channels, the ongoing saga of Sherry Redstone and will she sell to Skydance, will she not sell, and Larry Ellison, and all of the different players that kind of come into this. It almost feels like a succession plotline itself. So if you're the Recording Academy, who do you want to be in business with?
Yeah, look, but compared to the CBS of it all, Disney looks like the most solid, stable place that you could possibly end up. So I'm sure they feel good about that. One thing I'm interested in, because of the nature of these deals, obviously, the first ABC Grammys isn't until 27, right? So we have there's two more Grammys left in the old CBS deal. I'm curious to see how that goes. Obviously, CBS has no incentive to make anything other than a great show. They want people to watch it. But I'm curious what that looks like and this sort of like lame duck period where, you know, so much of their branding is that they've been the home of the Grammys and yada yada. Curious what it looks like when they do these two shows, not the home of the Grammys anymore.
What you said just made me think about leverage here, how Disney and ABC and how that relationship has been with the Oscars compared to what CBS has had with the Grammys. From the outside in, despite this negotiation, it does seem like things were fairly more relaxed from the CBS and Grammys relationship, despite some of the tough ratings that they had during the pandemic, compared to a lot of the challenges that we saw at the Oscars. That is the show that historically does get larger audience viewership, although not necessarily within that 18 to 49 group. The Grammys actually exceeded the Oscars this past year, but there was pushback from the ABC and from the Disney camp of being like, hey, you need to cut it down to having however many awards that were announced. They wanted to remove some of the below board categories from the actual broadcast itself. And then that led to pushback, but that was clearly an ABC thing. So even though ABC has the money, ABC also seems much more willing to poke holes and get involved with the programming to make sure that they fit this tight window, because of course they're buying the rights for this for now, $500 million over 10 years. They want to make sure that they can sell advertising against it. So I do wonder if they are going to be held to a higher standard of what the programming looks like in delivering on ratings than they've been for the past 54 years and maybe even the most recent years with CBS.
Yeah, it's a great question. Look, Disney didn't buy a boring show that nobody wants to watch. So what does that look like? We'll see in 2 years, but I guess we'll see.
And it also made me look at some of the history too, which was fascinating. ABC had the Grammys in the late 60s and early 70s when the show started. And NBC, it also had a quick moment there. But when the show moved to CBS, the American Music Awards were actually started by ABC because they no longer had the show. It made me think about CBS and just some of the things that they've either had or lost. SEC football, they no longer have that. CBS also, outside of its NFL slate, they don't have any agreements with Major League Baseball, NBA, NHL. I believe they have March Madness, they have the Masters. They now have the Golden Globes. This past year was the first year they have that. So maybe that's a bit of the trade-off. You lost this, but at least you have the Golden Globes. Not that's necessarily a concession by any means, but you still have some award right. show there.
Yeah. I'm curious where Disney ends up. Some of the CBS sports stuff that you just listed out was like prime real estate for where they would promote the Grammys in the run-up to the show. I'm curious where Disney ends up putting the sort of bulk of its sort of in-house advertising, what stuff they use to plug the Grammys in January, February. But they use the CMAs as a way to forge some kind of relationship with the Grammys. Also in this announcement, the Recording Academy said they're going to do some Grammy-branded kind of specials throughout the year, which CBS has done a lot of, these a Grammy salute to whoever, the Bee Gees or the Beach Boys or something. And those have been, I have no idea what ratings are like for those, but I think those have always been fairly high end as far as these things go. The booking's pretty good. It's always like the same old Grammy folks, but a fair amount of resources into those. I'm curious to see how or if Disney kind of changes up what these specials look like. Are they more documentary in nature? Are they more archival in the music sort of special music doc space? I think Disney has obviously made an impression in the terms of the quality of these kind of archival docs, the Beatles thing being maybe the best example of that. So I'm curious to see how they use Disney resources to change or evolve those Grammy specials throughout the year.
When you're talking about the promotion piece, it also made me think about how they've used Jimmy Kimmel's show as a promotional opportunity. And obviously he's ABC talent, his show's there. He was a host there for, I think, at least 4 years now for the Oscars itself. Although I don't expect him to necessarily go and do the Grammys. I think when he bowed out of this type of thing in general. But okay, who are those hosts going to be? Because they had a pretty steady roundup of CBS talent, whether it was getting LL Cool J from his show or other folks that were involved. It will be interesting to see who they end up pulling. Not that Trevor Noah himself is necessarily a CBS person. I'm sure that relationship could likely continue, but every network is going to want to do its own thing.
Hey man, 2027, Stephen A. Smith hosts the Grammys. Maybe we'll see it.
Hey, he's talked about wanting to get involved with late night and that stuff. And I think there was one of those years where him and Melissa Menudo were doing some post-Oscars interviews at the Vanity Fair party.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I don't even know what the ESPN Grammys overlay is. Maybe there's all kinds of wild stuff. Who knows?
And again, I think this speaks to why the Recording Academy was likely willing to take a step back and make the move here. Let's take a break for our Chartmetric Stat of the Week. One of the most celebrated and decorated artists by the Recording Academy is Adele. She's won 16 Grammy Awards. 7 of them are the Big Four Awards, including 2 Album of the Year Awards. Every time she drops new music, it's a moment, but Adele has continued to do this without touching TikTok. In fact, she's made it a point to let us know that she is not someone that is making music for TikTok, which is why Adele hasn't even created a TikTok account. But that has not stopped her music from doing well on that platform. Some of her songs like Send My Love, Someone Like You, and One and Only are on the TikTok all-time chart. Again, we shouldn't be surprised. It's Adele. Her music is huge and it'll continue to live on. Let's get back to the episode. You recently put up a piece that gave a breakdown on what to expect from this year's Grammys. This year also has a bit of that familiar feel of the Beyoncé and Taylor Swift of everything. It's hard to ignore the elephant in the room when you think about what to expect with this year's show.
Absolutely. Look, these two women, arguably the two dominant pop stars for the past decade, maybe throw Adele in and then you've got the top three. Beyoncé and Taylor have just been like, they're such an intertwined narrative, right? Over the past decade and a half since VMAs, the famous Kanye moment. And when I was looking through the stuff that I thought was going to be up for the highest level awards, I realized that in an interesting way, Taylor and Beyoncé hadn't been head to head for Album of the Year since the first time they were both nominated. And that just struck me, like, as intertwined as their careers have been in this one particular way, they hadn't gone head to head until this year, when I think we can be pretty assured that Taylor with Tortured Poets Department and Beyonce with Cowboy Carter are going to score a lot of nominations: Album of the Year, Record of the Year, Song of the Year. And these are two women, for all their success and for all their ubiquity at the Grammys, I think they embody such different tendencies about the Grammys, right? Beyonce, of course, the most awarded human in Grammys history, and yet can't win Album of the Year Grammy to save her life. Taylor, meanwhile, won Album of the Year more than anybody else in Grammys history. It is a fraught history for sure when you look at the track record that each of them has at the Grammys.
We look at last year, they both had their concert films and they both were famously at the premiere for each other, helping to promote them. They had two of the biggest tours that we saw last year. I think a lot of people could look at it and be like, oh, Taylor keeps beating Beyonce. But it was really only that year when Fearless came out and when the I Am Sasha Fierce album came out.
I mean, Beyonce has not been out here losing Album of the Year to Taylor Swift. She lost it to Beck. She lost it to Adele, of course, who said, I can't accept this award if it means that Beyonce doesn't win it. She lost to Harry Styles. So it's not Taylor Swift who's been winning this award instead of Beyonce. What's interesting about this year is that it could very well be. And I think that just draws a lot of questions. What do we think about the fact that Taylor Swift could win Album of the Year for the fifth time, whereas Beyonce has never won it once? And then, of course, there's this question of, all right, if Beyonce is going to win Album of the Year, is Cowboy Carter the album that should win it? Look, as a music lover, as a Beyonce fan, I don't think that this record is as culture moving as self-titled Beyonce or as Lemonade or as Renaissance. On the other hand, there's also the sense that this would be just like a make good from the Academy. Okay, we've taken it from you too many times. We're finally going to give it to you. That's not the way that Beyonce should win. Beyonce is not an artist that we should be giving a pity award to. That's insane. It's damned if you do, damned if you don't, which is unfortunate for the Recording Academy for sure.
This is her version of Al Pacino winning Best Actor for Scent of a Woman, right? You missed all those yeah, years exactly. From Godfather and all, Dog Day Afternoon, all those, and then now you win. But it could also be neither of them. We've also seen that Billie Eilish has been an early Grammy darling, someone that is still under 25 years old, and she had birds of a feather. But of course, Sabrina Carpenter or Shaboozy or Chappell Roan, artists that may not necessarily been on the radar of Grammy voters or more broadly the mainstream music listener, but they've had very big years and very big songs. So that'll be interesting to track this year as well.
Absolutely. 2024 was a wild year for new acts, or anyway, new superstars, with Sabrina and Chappell and Charlie XCX. They've been out here doing this for a long time, but it is undeniable that 2024 was a breakthrough year for these women who achieved a level of stardom they'd never had.
So there's all of these different types of things that kind of play themselves out. We also saw this last year where almost all of the nominees for Album of the Year were women. That also reflects some of the changes that we've seen in the Recording Academy itself and the voting body there. We've seen some of the reports that have come out where they have said that in the past 5 years, they've added a considerable amount of new members, over 8,000 or so. Yeah. It still hits that 13,000 number that they normally have, which is good. But as you've called out, that also means that they booted out a lot of people in order to keep that mix and keep that mix steady.
The Recording Academy is very proud of the fact that, as they frame this number, two-thirds, 66% of people who are going to vote on the Grammys this year were not voting members as recently as 2019. And that's a number worth sitting on for a second, because that's pretty impressive if your goal is to bring in new blood and new creatives into the Academy. But because they're keeping around that 12,000-13,000 number. And I asked Harvey Mason Jr., the CEO of the Recording Academy, I said, why is this the number? Is there some sort of reason that's the number? And he dodged the question and said that no, there isn't really a reason. I'm still a little bit curious and unconvinced on that. But it does show you that they have shown some people the door. They talk about it in terms of quote unquote requalifying, that you have to have shown that you have a X number of credits in the past X number of years to be considered still a credible recording industry professional. The idea is to sweep out folks who may have been riding high in the 70s or 80s or even the 90s, but have done very little since then. In theory, I think this is a sound idea. I have no doubt that the Recording Academy is full of people who do not keep up with modern music. And in fact, Harvey sent out a letter before voting this year that very starkly laid out the idea that we are asking you, we are imploring you to listen to all this music and not to just vote based according to your old favorites or your friends or blah, blah, blah. What effect that letter will have, who knows. But I do think that there is a little bit of note of caution to be sounded in the sense of, look, there are old timers in the Academy who may not be active anymore, but who are still, I think, fair to say, their legacies or their taste or their connections kind of shape the modern recording industry. So I think it'll be interesting over the next couple of months between nominations and voting and the actual ceremony to see if we hear from people who object to having been shown the door when they feel like they still have a kind of grasp on modern music.
In concept, the approach and the proposal did make sense, but we've also seen that, I think it was 2019 or 2020, that Billie Eilish had swept all four major awards. And that was based on a voting body that was much more reflective of that 2018-19 era. As good as it sounds, is that going to be the solution that creates more of the reflective result?
What you're saying hits upon the idea that there is a demographic issue, but there's also a taste issue. And the Grammys consistently, over years, over decades, value certain kinds of music and certain kinds of record. Billie, as young and as vital of a talent as she is, and as young as her fan base is, she is in many ways a classic Grammy singer. She's an undeniable vocal talent who believes in a kind of record making that is, sure, it's using digital tools and it's using the modern technology, but it's at the end of the day, it's her and Finneas making songs together. Do you know what I mean? Like the Beyoncé thing, I think one thing that's instructive about that is sometimes you'll hear these exasperated reactions from older Grammy voters about how many credited songwriters there are, because it's this sort of inherent suspicion of sampling. It's an inherent suspicion of a collaborative mode of record making that where Beyoncé is, as opposed to the sort of classic kind of singer-songwriter, she's more of an auteur and she's more of a, she's in the studio leading, but she's marshaling the talents of dozens of people to bring these records into existence. And I think that's just a suspicion that the Recording Academy has. I always think about, I think it's very helpful to remember that people might be like, oh, well, Daft Punk won Album of the Year. Of course, the album, the time they won with Random Access Memories was a record where they very explicitly said, we're going to make this record in the old-fashioned way, hand-played instruments in Los Angeles studios with all the old people who played on Thriller and who played on Michael McDonald records and whatever. It's a beautiful record, but that shows you that the Grammys came around on Daft Punk, not on Discovery, certainly not on Homework, but when they made a record that was essentially a Steely Dan record.
Whether it's Cowboy Carter or another future Beyoncé album or SZA or whoever, I do hope that we see that change here.
Despite people's many problems with the Grammys, performers still view the place as a platform to make news. Think about Jay-Z on this most recent show this year, when he came out and he had won the Dr. Dre sort of Innovator Award or whatever it was called. And he gave a speech where he chastised the Academy for not giving Album of the Year to Beyoncé. Now, knowing Jay-Z, that could have been just completely off the dome. Who knows? I have no idea. But point is, he viewed this as, all right, this is a place to do this. This has enough eyeballs. Taylor Swift as well. Taylor Swift announced Tortured Poets Department at the Grammys. Now, then in her speech, if I remember correctly, she said something like, I'm going to go backstage and give you the details on Instagram or something, which goes to the point that ultimately the number of followers she has on Instagram dwarf however many people are going to watch the Grammys, even over 7 days with DVR and yada yada. But again, Taylor, Jay, they are recognizing that this is a platform. It's a place to make news. And that is always going to be valuable as long as it lasts.
We even see that Taylor had done this at one of the VMAs when she announced the Midnight albums. And I know that's a different kind of award show. It's a bit of a trade of, if we give you this award, you'll come, right? Like that type of thing. Yeah. And no one would ever admit to that. But I know, and I know the Grammys aren't that way. Everyone in the room is just as shocked as Bonnie Raitt looked shocked when she won Song of the Year the year or two ago, right? That is the nature of how these things play themselves out. One thing that we should talk about itself is streaming. The streaming era has enabled these larger-than-life artists to have albums that may not live up to that expectation, but their name can propel the commercial side. But we may start to see some of that happen as well on the critical side too, especially looking at the awards. I feel like I've noticed that shift happen as well, just given some of the albums that have won in recent years. But what's your take on that?
Yeah, look, I think specifically in regards to Beyonce, Taylor, and SZA, Midnights, it is to me insane that there is a world in which Midnights could be called a album of the year if that means that SZA's SOS loses. SOS does literally everything we want, you know, an album to do. Midnights, though, to your point, because of the metrics that are available to us now, because of the how easy it is to see a juggernaut, Midnights just, and of course because of the Eras Tour, we also have to say that there's no doubt that played a role in it. It contributed to this air where like Midnights just coalesced as, oh, of course this was the album of the year. Even though I think if you're really trying to consider what does album mean? What does album of the year mean? What should this award represent? I think that there were such better sort of options for who should win that. And clearly the Recording Academy does still believe in those values, because you'd only have to go back a couple of years to remember when Jon Batiste won. I remember crunching some numbers at some point, and the number of streams that Jon Batiste had on his record that beat Billy, it beat Olivia. I mean, it was like insane. It was ridiculous. It was like nothing. And I say that to say that it's just doubly frustrating when a record like an album like SOS, which embodies so many of these values that we look to the Recording Academy to award, that they are distracted by the success of Midnights and by the success of Taylor Swift overall, when at other times they are very happy to ignore Olivia Rodrigo's streaming numbers in favor of Jon Batiste, which, no shots, great artist, interesting guy, whatever. But it's really hard to make a case that was the album of that year.
Like, Jon Batiste's album had the lowest odds of any of the other 10 albums that were nominated that year. So I think a lot of people as well were just as shocked. And it's the type of thing that you probably don't see in the same type of way happen elsewhere. But it, again, just speaks to how unpredictable all this can be, especially with these changing voting bodies and things like that.
Which I will say, look, just to be kind of devil's advocate for a second, that is ultimately what makes the Grammys fun and interesting, is that it is unpredictable. It's not the Billboard Music Awards. It's not the American Music Awards. It's not something that's tabulated by fan votes. Nobody cares, because you know before that you turn the thing on. The Grammys, you know, love them or hate them, they do keep alive some amount of suspense. They're quirky. They're idiosyncratic. Sometimes the reasons why things shake out are lamentable and they're bleak and grim. But I do want to hold space for, yes, to the extent that an awards show means anything in the first place, I do want to hold space for a show that is unpredictable and allows for the idiosyncrasies of taste, which I think is interesting.
And even in my own self-critique with some of these things here too, not to fall into the common trope of, if it's the result that I like, great, we finally appreciated great art. If it's the result that I don't like, why do we pay attention to this thing in the first place? Why do we give this thing life? It's like that ongoing contradiction. So we're having this conversation before the nominations come out, and we're always prone to a few groans and a few people that are quite upset. Who is going to feel the most disappointed after the nominations come out? And who can be a particular artist, a record label, a team? But who would you have to guess?
I don't know if this person's going to be disappointed or not, but I have my eyes on Morgan Wallen. Morgan Wallen has a very tortured history. Well, it's not tortured history with the Recording Academy. He just hasn't ever been nominated, which there's a lot of reasons for that. There was, of course, the TMZ N-word video. There's also just the idea that Morgan Wallen is the kind of country act that the Grammys don't like. They like Luke Combs. They like Jason Isbell. They like that kind of stuff. They don't like Morgan Wallen. Last year, or I guess earlier this year, his song Last Night was nominated for Best Country Song, but Morgan Wallen didn't write it. It wasn't an award for him. It was an award for his songwriters. And so he's never been nominated, which is only noteworthy insofar as this is one of the two most commercially dominant acts in all of music. Do you know what I mean? And so I think it'll be interesting to see if this year he's on that huge Post Malone record, the single they had together. Post Malone is, weirdly enough, is actually a Grammy's favorite, has been nominated multiple times. So I'm very curious to see how that shakes out. If voters have embraced Morgan Wallen, if Post Malone was able to get them over it, whatever. I think that's going to be an interesting kind of bellwether moment. My other weird, quirky prediction is I feel like we're going to see Billy Joel in Song of the Year for his big comeback single, which was not a great song, but Grammys love Billy Joel. You got to remember that Bonnie Raitt, as you mentioned earlier, she won Song of the Year, which I just feel like I could totally see Billy Joel getting into that same little slot and ending up in Song of the Year by surprise.
Let's see. My snubs, and these may not be too much of a surprise, but I think people that are normally in this category, like Ariana Grande and Dua Lipa, will not be.
Yeah.
Not jumping out on a limb to say that those albums didn't quite hit either the way that them or their record labels quite thought that they would have. And I don't think that's going to be reflected as much. And I didn't really even see much promotion on that end anyway. You know, Ariana Grande's team have moved on to this movie coming out, and Dua Lipa's team have been getting ready for a big tour mode. So I won't be surprised to see if they don't get it. The one that I'm nervous for because is Shaboozey and the Bar Song Tipsy, because I like the song a lot. I like Shaboozey. I'm just not sure, especially given everything that we've talked about with Beyonce and how people look at someone that's making country music that doesn't look like a lot of people that make country music. And despite it being commercially, at least from a Billboard perspective, the biggest song of the year, the Grammy voters didn't nominate Blinding Lights. And that was clearly the biggest song of 2020. So it wouldn't be unusual to see the commercial juggernaut for the year not get nominated for some of the big awards that we may see.
I do think the one thing that gives me hope about Shaboozey is the Grammys weirdly went all in on Lil Nas X. Grammy voters do like sometimes a person who you think is X and they turn out to be Y. I think we can look back and say Lil Nas X, he was never really a country singer. He was a guy who opened the door with a country song, and he's done a lot of things since then, blah, blah, blah. I think Shaboozey himself would say he's more of a country act than certainly than Lil Nas X. And yes, I think I reiterate your point, which is that I just don't know if voters are going to get behind somebody who doesn't fulfill the sort of classic white guy idea of a country star. The country category is going to be very interesting this year because of Shaboozey, of course, because of Beyonce. I'm curious to see if these folks get album, record, song, the big awards, but I think country album, performance, song, that's going to be very interesting to watch too, just because it's been such an interesting year in country music.
We got some big hitters in that category for sure. Yeah. All right. So before we close things out, if you have to pick one album that will win Album of the Year, which one would you pick?
My sense is that this is such a cheat of an answer, but I really am truly 50-50 on Taylor and Beyonce. I'm confident it will be one of them. And I think it's going to be either Taylor's going to win it because Taylor just always wins it. And this record was such a juggernaut, even though it weirdly had no hit singles except for Fortnite. But then I can also see with Beyonce, I can just see that finally voters, like we were saying earlier, the kind of make good thing. While I would be gratified to see Beyonce win an award she should have won a long time ago, you know, I shiver to think of the think pieces to come if it's Cowboy Carter that finally wins the award, because it's such a complicated win if that happens. It's going to be like, oh man, the discourse will just be discoursing. What about you? What do you think?
I'm with you on one side of that 50%. I think it's going to be Taylor Swift again. I still can't get over the feeling of being in that arena when Taylor Swift was named or brought up as a nominee for any category. You would have thought it was Michael Jordan walking out of the tunnel at the 1997 Chicago Bulls, and the announcer being,
I mean, it basically was,
right? And those are the same people that are voting for this, right? Yes. It's a room full of voters, and it's hard to not think about that. Who I think deserves to win would probably be a different answer, but that's who I would pick if I had to pick one person.
You almost can't blame them. Look, at the end of the day, the Recording Academy is a trade group. They are invested in protecting and in lifting up the recording industry. Taylor Swift makes absolute humongous smash hit records that say to the world, hey, music is something worth spending money on. It's worth spending streaming money on. It's worth buying 8,000 million different vinyl records. It's worth spending money on concert tickets. So it's not hard to envision that people feel good, people in the biz feel good about Taylor Swift, because Taylor Swift's success, I don't know if it's a tide that lifts all boats, but it does make the argument that music is worth spending money on.
It's like that memorable Barbara Walters quote from 60 Minutes. Taylor Swift is the music industry.
Oh, Barbara. What a genius.
Yes. The quote that'll continue to live on.
Absolutely.
Michael, this is a ton of fun. Thank you for coming on. I'm sure we'll have to tap in and continue to read any of your writing on the Grammys and anything else, but appreciate you for joining us. This is great.
Yeah, man. Happy to be here. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. Send it to one or two people you think would really get value out of listening to this episode. And while you're at it, if you could rate and review the show, that would be great. Rate the podcast on Apple Podcasts, rate the podcast on Spotify, rate the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. That helps make sure that the word gets out about Trapital and what we're building here. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you next time.